I'm here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with Marshall Gantz, who in many ways has good claim to be the father of community organizing in the United States and has been an inspiration to the movement for change. Marshall, start with your story of a young man in California who ended up in the middle of the civil rights movement.
Well, I grew up in California, but came to Harvard in 1960, which was a very exciting moment, and the civil rights movement was breaking out all around, and that's how I really got involved in politics. I think partly because I'd been grown up in a family that taught that racism kills, as a result of our family's experience with the Holocaust, and the understanding that this struggle to go from slavery to freedom is something that happens every generation. And it was a movement of young people, and it attracted those of us with critical eyes and hopeful hearts. And, you know, Dr. King, when he led the bus boycott, I was only 25. So I went to Mississippi as part of the Summer Project in 1964, and that's where I got introduced to the politics of organizing and understanding that that things don't change without power. I'm a fan of Paul Tillich, who wrote a book called Love, Power, and Justice, and he argues that love that doesn't understand power can never be just, just as power without love can never be just. And the civil rights movement was about understanding how to mobilize power from community resources by developing leadership, and that became my calling for 28 years.
And it's your argument that power resides within people, but it's just not organized, and that's why ordinary people lose.
The capacity, the resources lie within us. Then how to combine them and use them strategically. I mean, I'm a big fan of the David and Goliath story because it shows how resources, how resourcefulness can compensate for lack of resources. And I mean, that's what happens in that story. David's not a soldier, not a warrior, and when he's offered the warrior's weapons to fight, he can't use them. It's only when he realizes that a stone and a sling as a shepherd are his tools that then he's able to defeat Goliath. So there's a lot of process of discovery that, and then through collective action, understanding how to transform it into power.
And it's your argument that the Obama campaign in 2008 showed the political potential of this in a obvious electoral way.
Absolutely, and even more so in 2007, because it really had no institutional support. It had to be built from the ground up. And a place like South Carolina, 500 House meetings produced the army of several thousand people that were able to win the election for him. And so there's something about building from the ground up that campaign demonstrated.
What do you think is the heart of the model? How would you describe to someone who doesn't know much about it, what would you say is the heart of the community organizing model?
Well, I think it's three things. I think that it's about a commitment to leadership development, to developing the skills required for collective action. Secondly, it's about discerning the resources that people hold that could be turned into sources of power if they were organized to use them. And then thirdly, it's actually doing that and making it happen. So there's a motivational dimension, which is the narrative dimension. There's a strategic dimension, and there's an action dimension. Or put in other terms, it's about harnessing the power of the hands through the action, of the head through the strategic imagination, and the heart through finding the sources of courage to take the risks necessary to trust others and to make change.
And do you think it's easier to organize for things or against them?
I think that it's both and, because to me it's like we aren't moved to act unless we really perceive an injustice of some kind. Otherwise, we're operating out of habit. We operate out of habit most of the time. It takes a challenge of some kind to provoke us into action. And so when we perceive a tension between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be, it threatens our values in some way, that creates an opportunity. So in a sense, it's always against, but it's also always for. And it's that tension that creates the energy that drives organizing.
And you've told us your history. What do you think is the next frontier in community organizing? It's gone from being at the margins to being in the White House.
Well, that was very interesting. One of the exciting things that I get to do now is teach a distance learning class. And so we have students from all over the world. We did our first organizing workshop in Beijing in December with 64 NGO leaders from all over China at Peking University. We did our full training in organizing. People said, oh, no, people there won't talk about themselves. It was got to be one of the most exciting trainings I've done. The combination of creativity and humor and discipline and this rising generation, it's enormously exciting. So I think we're just on the threshold, because unless we find ways that the capacity to make decisions and choices about our future gets widely shared as opposed to a narrow elite, I think then we're in real trouble, and I think that's what's at stake now.
And if people are interested, where do they find out more?
Well, they can certainly email me here.
Right. And your address is?
Marshall_Gans@harvard.edu.
Very good. Marshall Gans, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, David.